from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Who should plan and conduct drone strikes on al-Qaeda targets from remotely poised aircraft? Well, Congress is placing restrictions on a plan by the Obama administration to take responsibility away from the CIA and shift it more to the Pentagon. We want to update you on the story and take stock of what lies ahead with Eric Schmidt, national security correspondent for The New York Times, who has been covering the story. Eric Schmidt, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
Okay, and glad to have you. We just talked with Congresswoman Pelosi, and as she was leaving, she was saying this is getting pretty complicated. It's kind of a turf war, isn't it?
It really is, and what you have here is the committees that oversee the military, the House and Senate Armed Services Committee, who very much favor the administration's move to shift more of the control of the armed drone program to the Pentagon, thinking there'll be a little bit more transparency perhaps in that regard, pitted against the chairman of the House and Senate Intelligence Committees, who perhaps understandably are more disposed to having the program remain where it is, and largely in control by the CIA. Their argument is the CIA has been running this program with increasingly effectiveness over the last decade or so, and to shift now to the Pentagon could jeopardize the accuracy of the operations and perhaps even put more civilians on the ground at risk.
But, of course, and the argument is seen, for example, our own Senator Feinstein square off against Senator McCain. Senator McCain, ironically, in some ways, I suppose you could say, supporting the Obama administration, and Senator Feinstein on the other side. But the argument is the CIA's traditional role is intelligence gathering.
That's right. And you have an instance now where the new CIA director, John Brennan, former top advisor to President Obama, has made it clear that he wants to get the CIA more away from some of these lethal operations that became part of its signature over the last decade, and more into its traditional analytical role. The CIA was criticized, for instance, for largely missing the Arab Spring, Arab Awakening, for instance, because perhaps their focus was too much on the lethal operations that are the traditional bailiwick of the Pentagon. So you do have that internal tension within the CIA and the intelligence community as well.
Wasn't there also a kind of, we'll call it a watershed mark, back in December when a strike occurred in Djibouti in Yemen by the military and it killed a number of innocent people?
It was. It was a kind of a signature case, kind of following the president's speech back in May of how this was, he was planning to shift some of these operations, particularly in the area of Yemen, which organization would run these. And this was a strike that was carried out by the military, run by a military drone flown out of a base in Djibouti that killed, by some accounts, more than a dozen civilians, perhaps in a wedding party there. It's always hard to get these kind of details on the ground in remote places as Yemen is, but it certainly added fuel to the ammunition of those, such as Senator Feinstein, who said the military really isn't up to this task. The sensitive task of collecting information, identifying targets, and carrying out strikes without hurting civilians on the ground, which is one of, of course, the prerequisites of the president's plan that he outlined back in May.
Senator Feinstein has also said that it appears that, there's been discretion on the part of the CIA in terms of preventing collateral damage. But from many people's perspective, there's been all too much collateral damage. But how much of this is political? Congress trying to be in charge of covert drone operations and the suspicion that the military isn't up to the task?
Well, that's the other thing here. You had, again, the intelligence committees, which have been much more involved in these lethal operations through drone strikes and other kind of paramilitary operations that the CIA has conducted in places like Afghanistan and Iraq and now Yemen and all these kind of places over the last decade, they've kind of gotten used to these type of things. So you're basically saying we're going to take away some of your toys. People get mad, both the CIA and on the Hill and the committees that oversee them.
And how does this look in the budget appropriations? It's not very transparent either, is it?
Well, yeah, no, it's not, because here you had this giant, what they call in the congressional lingo, the omnibus giant spending bill, over $1 trillion spending bill to keep the government running for the next several months, that presumably would have all the details that we could kind of peer into. But this particular provision was tucked into a classified annex that deals with CIA spending money. So it's been difficult to find out exactly what the terms of the provision are. It looks like, from our reporting, that the president would have at least some leeway in the restrictions that Congress has placed on him in this classified annex to invoke national security as a means of continuing with his with his plan to ship more of these operations to the Pentagon. But it's unclear, at least to the public view, exactly how far he'd be able to go.
We're talking with Eric Schmidt, senior writer and national security correspondent for The New York Times, also co-author of Counterstrike, The Untold Story of America's Secret Campaign Against Al-Qaeda. And the controversy is over drones generally, but also their use by the U.S. government in targeted killings, which continues on. And President Obama signaled last spring he would shift control of the drone program from the CIA to the Pentagon. That was after he gave a speech at the National
Defense University here in Washington, yes.
Yeah, let me give out the phone number. Many of you have strong feelings about this, and certainly many of you have questions about it, and it's an opportunity to join the conversation, and I'd like to invite you to do that. Our toll-free number is available right now, and you can join us now at 866-733-6786. It does boil down to really who ought to be in charge here. And as I said, and as we've been conversing, CIA traditionally has been an intelligence gathering operation for the most part. Should it also be essentially a paramilitary operation, which it's been in drones? And who would have better control in terms of using drones in a transparent way and also to kill, obviously, less people who are in the way of fire who don't deserve to be killed, or this is assuming that even those who are the targets deserve to be killed. It's hard to say because there has not been a lot of transparency. But you are welcome to join us again at 866-733-6786 or email us forum@kqed.org. You can also go to our website and communicate with us that way. It's kqed.org/forum and simply click on this segment or tweet us. And our Twitter handle is @kqed. Forum. There was a foreign policy article that you might have seen, Eric Schmidt. It was written by Mike Ozenko called Clip the Agency's Wings, Take the Drones from the CIA. And he does argue that if it went over to the Pentagon, there'd be more transparency. The CIA would be able to focus on its primary responsibility, which is intelligence collection. But it would also, he says, provide clear and unified congressional oversight. And it seems to me that on the political side of things, that's really why this battle is going on.
Well, certainly that's one of the more immediate issues, Michael, that you do have this controversy between the Armed Services Committee and the Intelligence Committees, and then the relevant committees that deal with their spending on either side as well. One thing that I have to kind of raise a question about from my own reporting is just whether shifting control of these drone operations to the Pentagon would really make them that much more transparent. These operations, when they're carried out by the military, are conducted by an organization called the Joint Special Operations Command. This is the command that oversees things like SEAL Team 6, the unit that went in and killed Osama bin Laden. These are the super secret military commandos. And I found in my reporting that this organization can be just as secretive as the CIA in terms of disclosing details of their strikes. Perhaps from their standpoint, they don't want to give away any advantage to the enemy on the ground who they're hunting, whether they're being hunted by CIA drones or as they are called, JSOC drones. And in fact, in Yemen, right now, the drone operations are shared between the two organizations. The CIA operates out of a secret base in southern Saudi Arabia. The military flies out of a base in Djibouti. So it's really, one has to wonder a little bit of how much more transparency would be gained by shifting them to the Pentagon. At least that's the argument that many even in the CIA and the intelligence community camp argue.
Well, let's hear what our listeners have to say, and we'll begin with you, Jack. Good morning. You're on the air. Jack, hi.
Hi, Michael. Good morning. I'd like to ask your guest whether he's aware of Josh Begley's research as part of his graduate thesis at New York University. He has effectively dismissed the official PR defense of their effectiveness and concluded that over 98.5% of the strikes kill innocent victims. And his research has been confirmed by the Columbia Law School Human Rights Clinic and Stanford University and also Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International have effectively stated that the drone strikes amount to extrajudicial killings.
Any sense of this? Are you familiar with it, Eric Schmidt?
I'm not familiar with Mr. Begley's article per se. I am familiar with this argument, though, and it's one that's kind of raged on for several years, particularly since the drone program began to escalate in numbers under, coincidentally, under President Obama. What's been interesting is how, after peaking in about 2010, the numbers of drone strikes have really come down across the board, certainly in Pakistan, where the vast majority of drone strikes have been conducted over the years solely by the CIA. But even in Yemen over the last couple of years, these numbers are coming down.
But there's been such secrecy, you have to wonder how that research can actually nail these figures.
Yeah, so what you have on the ground here is you have different groups going out and trying, culling from media reports, in large extent local media and others, trying to piece together what the civilian casualty count is. And the range has just been tremendous. I think what was interesting is just a report out in the last couple of days from the Center for Investigative Journalism, a British outfit, that has traditionally been quite critical of the administration and their counts. They came out with a figure that last year only 4 civilians were killed in Pakistan. And this is a group that's usually quite critical of the CIA. So I think certainly one would have to be very skeptical of some of the military and CIA's claims that, you know, they have no civilian casualties. But I think the trend has been going down, even as the overall numbers have been going down. They've been able to reduce the number of civilian casualties, not to zero by any means, in large part because it's in their own interest, too. Obviously, for humanitarian reasons, of course, it would be a principal reason, but the counterproductive nature of having civilian casualties and its effect on creating and spurring more terrorists and people more to antagonize the United States is certainly, there's a lot of evidence to that.
We'll bring on more of your calls. Bruce, you're on. Good morning.
I would love to read the analysis by Eric on the timeline of ineptitude, because the way I do math, everything starts in 1960 with regime Iran.
We've got a lousy line here, Bruce. You just keep breaking up. But I think the gist of the call, Eric Schmidt, is that the CIA is inept, so it should be moved for that reason.
Well, again, I mean, even this, the critics, certainly the CIA has not been perfect in its strikes overall, and in particular, there was a series of strikes just in recent years called signature strikes, where the CIA and the military, for that matter, were no longer going after an individual by name. So let's, you know, a particular terrorist they were hunting specifically, they were looking at what they called a signature. That is, let's say, a certain type of convoy moving in a certain area at a certain time of day. That provided a signature, and without even knowing who necessarily was in this convoy, the intelligence community was designating those as likely terrorists, and they were attacking those convoys. Those type of strikes have been largely curtailed, if not eliminated altogether. You know, the intelligence community is still looking at different ways of how you identify the most high-value targets. And interestingly enough, as the U.S. withdraws from Afghanistan, one of the big arguments for going after some of these signature strikes is being taken off the table. One of the major concerns of the military was, while these may be not high-level terrorists they were going after with the drones, they were fighters that were going from Pakistan into Afghanistan and attacking American troops or other allied troops, and thus the U.S. was justified in attacking those particular groups and sometimes killing civilians as part of that.
Yeah, but in Afghanistan, like Yemen, as we alluded to earlier, there were wedding parties that were hit.
Right, but my point is that now if U.S. troops are largely gone from Afghanistan, there won't be this need for self-defense against these groups, and therefore there'll be fewer of those kind of targets that will presumably be teed up for attack. So that would hopefully, in the end, reduce the likelihood that you'd have these accidental strikes against things, as you mentioned, Michael, the wedding parties.
Here's Stephen. Stephen, you're on forum. Good morning.
Wondering if you thought that the move to try to keep the operations in the CIA was more of an effort to maintain plausible deniability. Because, I mean, if you look historically at covert operations like the U-2 spy plane incident, they kind of circled the wagons around the president to shield him from showing that he had any knowledge of the operation, because if the executive had direct knowledge, then that would kind of make any future administration want to keep the reins on these operations, whereas it's a little bit harder to keep the lid on things in the military.
Well, it's an interesting thought. Eric Schmidt, reflect on it?
Well, the caller's right. I mean, this is, in a weird way, this is actually, the CIA program in particular, is the most overt, covert program that it's ever operated, particularly the one in Pakistan, because every time there's a drone strike in Pakistan, it's technically covert. We're not in a state of war. against the Pakistani government, and the Pakistani government has plausible deniability, as thinly veiled as it is, to say, well, we don't know who carried out that strike, when everybody, you know, knows right away pretty much there's a drone strike. All the drone strikes in Pakistan are CIA operated, and so there is this veneer of deniability that they have because it is a CIA program. That's the main reason that program, as long as it lasts, will remain in the CIA hands. They essentially got a carve out for Pakistan to remain as it is. The turf battle here really is over what's going on in Yemen, which is important because counterterrorism officials have said that the al-Qaeda affiliate there poses the most direct and immediate threat to the American homeland, the offshoot there in Yemen does.
Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula, you're talking
about. That's correct,
yeah. Let me thank Stephen for his call. Let me get John on next. John, thanks for waiting. You're on with us. Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, how's it going? And just want to hear your comments on Mark Mazzetti's The Way of the Knife, if you had a chance to read it or not. I got to confess, I totally skimmed. I'm a former member of JSOC, PSYOPs particularly. And I just want to share one of my fears. I'd like to hear you comment on my greatest one. Is just the more we focus on these technological tenacious drone strikes, warrantless wiretapping, blanket surveillance, the more we move away from the things that work. I mean, it was human intelligence from a Saudi double agent that caught the underwear bomber, the numerous other, the Boston bombers. All of these different terrorist events, you know, haven't been solved from us picking up on them ahead of time or shooting somebody from the sky, but working sources and building relationships that last over the years. And my greatest fear is the more we focus on these little blips on the radar, the more we're losing the war.
Well, it's an argument that, like the Pentagon or the CIA argument that we're talking about, one hears frequently in terms of strong passions on both sides. Eric Schmidt, I think it's almost axiomatic that if you don't put all the weight on technology, you're going to have better boots on the ground in terms of gathering intelligence.
Right, and I appreciate the caller and the caller's service. He makes a very good point, is you don't want a problem that's developed over the last several years is that the government, particularly the CIA, in many ways, has become enamored of drone strikes rather than just a tactic, which is what they've started out to be. They've almost become a strategy unto themselves. And I think what the White House has tried to do with President Obama's speech is pull that back into a more circumscribed type policy where this is a tactic that you use, hopefully as a last result, when either U.S. forces or allied forces on the ground are not available or unwilling to carry out operations against an enemy. That said, all these operations against terrorists, whether they be the homegrown, such as the Tsarnaev brothers in Boston, responsible for the Marathon bombings, or as the callers alluded to, the insurgents in places like Afghanistan, Yemen, and Iraq, all this revolves on picking up crucial intelligence and the ability of all the intelligence networks to work together, pull all that kind of information together, and in the parlance of the community, fuse that intelligence so that it can be acted upon. This, of course, is also at the heart of the debate right now we're seeing with the NSA, is how much collection can you do that doesn't interfere with personal privacy.
Boris writes to us by email, let the CIA have their drones. They've been carrying out covert assassinations in South America, for example, for decades. At least now, when a drone strikes, the finger can be pointed directly at the trigger man. And a tweet from Joshua, who says no one deserves to be assassinated. And a tweet from Alex, who asks what percentage of those killed in drone strikes are considered civilians. And again, that's something we really don't know, Eric Schmidt, is it?
The process by which they nominate and basically select the target that they go after, whether it be a military strike or a CIA strike, is very, very opaque. My colleague Mark Mazzetti, the previous caller referenced, tried to get that and did about as good a job as any in his new book, The Way of the Knife, in trying to dissect that process.
Let me say, we featured on forum, so it's in our archives if anyone wants to hear that interview.
But I mean, in particular, there are individuals, there have been four Americans who've died as a result of drone strikes over the years, and only one of them, the former Yemeni American preacher who was here in the United States for a while, details ever came out about that. So right now it's very difficult to kind of understand the fine-grained details of how the government, particularly the intelligence community and the lawyers, by the way, there are a lot of lawyers involved in this, ensuring both the Pentagon and the CIA that rules of rules of war, law of war rules are being observed. But this is very difficult for the average citizen to get any kind of visibility into.
You mentioned the Saudi base that drones were hitting from, hitting in Yemen. Those are still going on now.
That's right. That's right. Although the frequency is down in Yemen, there are strikes taking place. Again, it's the way it's been explained to us, it's kind of targets of opportunity, whether they're carried out by CIA drones based in Saudi Arabia or by military drones carried out in Djibouti, is the one you referenced, Michael, that allegedly killed civilians in Yemen in mid-December.
And again, our guest is Eric Schmidt, senior writer and national security correspondent for The New York Times, co-author of Counterstrike, The Untold Story of America's Secret Campaign Against Al-Qaeda. And Chris joins us. Chris, you're on. Good morning.
Hi, thank you. I think it's still the policy. I haven't heard anybody say this policy has been withdrawn, that anybody within the vicinity who's of military age within the area of a targeted, suspected militant, often suspected based on faulty intelligence, is considered a target, a legitimate target. And to me, this is an obvious, it obviously points to collateral damage. I mean, I think when your criteria is so broad, you can't help but kill innocent people. And I think it's naive to think otherwise. Finally, I want to ask a question. Where are you getting your figures about all these reductions and so on in strikes or what have you? If you're getting them from the government, I sure as heck don't trust them. They have a vested interest in minimizing their damage, minimizing their villainy in this.
Eric Schmidt.
My source for these strikes is certainly not the government. Again, these are covert programs, particularly the CIA, so they don't give any public accounting of these. We are getting these from organizations that have built up a track record over the years, independent organizations such as the New America Foundation, Long War Journal, who've done a pretty good job at tracking through both local media and their sources these kind of strikes. And again, these strikes are now being reported publicly when they happen. These aren't secret by any means, so we can kind of keep track of them. What is difficult is to find out who the target was, who was killed, how many civilians were killed on the ground. That's one of the great challenges today.
Let me bring Neil on next. Neil, thanks for waiting. You're on forum. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm sure this probably sounds naive, but assuming we do want to have clear designations of powers and mandates for intelligence gathering versus, let's say, military strikes, why can't there be or aren't there specialized divisions or units in the Pentagon that work closely with specialized intelligence units in the CIA so that the specialized units in the military wing get the intelligence from the CIA and act on it? And I guess, my question is why people, I'd like to hear the arguments against that kind of a situation.
Well, I think if you talk to people in that organization, the Joint Special Operations Command, of which one of the previous callers said he was a former member of, I think you would say there is quite a bit of collaboration, particularly on the ground, between these two organizations in terms of sharing intelligence, sharing targeting techniques, sharing the actual aircraft that carry out these strikes. That over the years they have developed, the military will argue and the commandos will argue, they'll push back on this argument that they don't use as much discretion, they don't have as much knowledge or sophistication about avoiding civilian casualties on the ground as the CIA does. They basically push back on that argument and say, while we may not conduct as many of these strikes, we're just as careful, we have models that we use that will look at, depending on what kind of warhead you use on a particular drone missile, what the fragmentation blast of that will be. There's a tremendous amount of technology that goes into this. The bottom line, however, comes down to what's the intelligence on the ground? How sure are you the target is really who you think it is, and it's not, you're not being used by one faction or another on the ground, which has happened in the past, for having the Americans be basically the air force for one faction or another and killing off somebody else's enemy. The U.S. has to be very careful and guard against that, and I think they've tried to do about as good a job as they can.
Well, we've also, I think, learned an important lesson from 9/11, that agencies don't always work together, and they're often, even at cross purposes, are competitive with one another.
Absolutely, and that's why we're seeing this debate today. I think the farther away you get from the field level, the more the turf battles take up, whether you're talking about agencies battling it out with each other, in this case, the Pentagon, the CIA to some extent, or certainly their oversight committees on Capitol Hill. Here in Washington, the turf wars are alive and well.
We also have a lot of bad intelligence, and we have a lot of intelligence that so-called intelligence that jumps the gun and is peremptory.
That's right. And then when that happens, there's tremendous blowback, whether it's, as you've mentioned before, there's accidental civilian deaths, wedding parties, and this gives the United States and these particular programs even more of a black eye than they have. And again, it's just adding fuel to the propaganda that Al-Qaeda and its affiliates put out there, that the U.S. is at war with Islam. It's a false narrative, but it's one that's fueled by these accidental strikes. They'll say this is all deliberate and part of an American campaign, and certainly it doesn't help with our allies, who are also, many of which are opposed to the use of American strikes in this way.
Eric, while we have you here, and we're coming up to the end of this segment, unfortunately, but there's been a lot of debate that's gone on right on this program about whether what is called Al-Qaeda is indeed really Al-Qaeda. In other words, is the U.S. government talking about Sunni warriors and jihadis or anybody that doesn't necessarily fit into the paradigm of what we think are our best interests as Al-Qaeda?
Well, and just as a kind of an advertisement for our colleague Ben Hubbard, our Beirut bureau chief, watch the New York Times Week in Review section next Sunday. He's going to get into a discussion about this because it's one of the key arguments. Now, you know, what is Al-Qaeda today? Is it? It's not the organization that existed on 9/11 of 2001, hierarchical, based in Afghanistan, under the leadership of Osama bin Laden. That group has largely been decimated, although it's still alive and well with the leaders of Zawahiri in Pakistan. What you now have are affiliates in places like North Africa, in Yemen, in Somalia, and increasingly, and very scarily right now, in places like Iraq and Syria. That's where the resurgence has come.
And Libya and Pakistan.
Well, clearly, it's still in Pakistan. The headquarters is still in Pakistan. But what you've seen is the kind of atomization of Al-Qaeda now. And that's becoming, in many view, it's a more serious problem, although less of a lethal threat to the United States than it was on the original 9/11.
We'll have to read Ben Hubbard, and thank you, Eric Schmidt. We'll continue to read you as well. Eric Schmidt, senior writer and national security correspondent for The New York Times, co-author of Counterstrike, The Untold Story of America's Secret Campaign Against Al-Qaeda. When we come back, we're going to talk about an entirely different subject, about writers who drink. Olivia Lang will be joining us. Stay tuned for that. For all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.